Some say that this song is the first ever written about the game of golf. It was composed for the 1948 movie Honor Caddy, starring Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. Crosby's the guy whose voice would make the song famous. It seems unlikely that Straight Down the Middle is really the first song ever written about golf. Golf's been played since the mid-15th century, and countless odes, arias, and ditties must have been written and lost over the course of time. But what is clear is that Bing Crosby, the best-selling recording artist of the 20th century, was a big fan of golf. His son Nathaniel Crosby starts our story there in his own words.
I think he really caught the bug in his college years at Gonzaga. His Rhythm Boys partner, Al Rinker, was his golfing buddy. When he quit his law clerk job and ventured for Hollywood stardom, he and Al Rinker left with a drum set and a bag of golf clubs in the back of their jalopy, made their way from Spokane to Los Angeles. He budgeted time. It was his foremost thought when he woke up in the morning is how he was going to carve it into a schedule. And his radio shows were the first tape-delayed broadcasts. That, of course, was so that he could get on the golf course more often.
This is Ken Carpenter, welcome you to the Bing Crosby Show for Chesterfield. Produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Judd Collins with the Bears, and Bing's guests, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald.
And the next thing you know, it was Clark Gable and Lucille Ball and Jimmy Durante and Oliver Hardy and all of these guys hanging out at the Lakeside Golf Club, you know, 9 or 18 holes in the afternoon between their work gigs. I was the youngest son from the second generation, so he was 58 years old when I was born, which is a little bit older than I am now. And the idea of having more children or another litter with me being 54 is just incomprehensible. So Dad had an incredible amount of stamina and energy. Life has been a downward spiral for me because I was born into digs that included a 30,000-foot house. So at any rate, we had a 5-acre estate and had a big, big backyard. Dad filled in the pool, which made for a nice chipping area. And I used that backyard to hit balls at age 3 with plastic balls first. Dad would be out there. He was fighting the shanks in his later years, which is a horrifying metal affliction where you hit the ball off the neck of the club no matter what you do. So he'd be in the backyard with me, chipping around the house for hours on end. He let my brother, who's 3 years older, play with him at the Burlingame Country Club when my brother turned, oh, I'd say 9 or 10. So my immediate goal at that point was to get good enough to play at the Burlingame Country Club with my dad and my brother. I probably made it to the big course when I was about 8 or 9. Then it became a goal to be better than my brother at anything. So I chose golf because he was basically a better everything else than I was. So I focused on golf and, you know, not only was able to play with my dad, but I think I went from about a 18 handicap to a 4 handicap when I was just about turning 12. And at that point, my dad, you know, couldn't play enough golf with me. He just loved it. He sang so many love songs, but never did he sing a song that said, "I love you" in the song. And the one song that was written for him was Moonlight Becomes You. And in one of the phrases, it says, "If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so." I'm not going to sing for you.
If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so.
You know, when you've got your songwriters basically avoiding the term "I love you" in their lyrics, you can grow to expect that you're not going to hear "I love you," but it's something that you always knew. You knew he did. The first day that I beat my brother was the first day that I beat my dad, and I think it was that summer when I was 13, and I think I shot an 82 or something, and my brother had had a bad day and shot an 84, and my dad had just had surgery about 6 months earlier, had a lung operation. Dad said that the injury disqualified it as being a real event. You know, he maintained a 4 handicap until he was 70, and then the surgery happened, and he probably slipped to about a 10 or 12 handicap after that. I was extremely motivated to try to become the next Jack Nicklaus. You know, everybody referred to me and my brother as the son of Bing Crosby growing up, and that can wear on a kid who's trying to find his own identity. So I think that there was a burning desire to kind of cut my own cloth and make a name for myself. Well, I was lucky enough to win my first club championship at the Burlingame Country Club when I was 15 years old. Dad was still alive for that, so he came home that night and told my mom that it was the happiest day of his life. You know, she was like, excuse me, you know who you're talking to. You're not talking about the birth of your children. You're not talking about our wedding day. You're talking about today. At any rate, he was able to watch me play in some junior tournaments, and no matter how he tried to disguise himself, he would nevertheless pick up 8 or 10 people who figured out who he was, and he was always concerned that that would be a distraction for my performance. So he would literally watch me from a hole away and have his binoculars out. I didn't know he was even watching me until he said, you know, I saw you used a wedge from off the green. Why didn't you use a straight-faced club? I'm like, Dad, where were you? I was like, oh, I was watching you. Dad died doing what he loved to do. He putted out, shooting an 82, I think, and on the way back to the clubhouse died, you know, after finishing his 18th hole, which is better than finishing your life in a nursing home. His life was cut short when I was just turning 16 years old. I was actually the favorite to win the U.S. Junior because I'd qualified by beating the field by 7 shots. And I was so focused on winning that U.S. Junior for my dad, and then it didn't happen. But I basically held on to that motivation and, you know, the bigger tournament with the U.S. Amateur a year and a half later. And I came from behind in my last couple of matches. I was 3 down and 4 down, and you know, it would have been great for him to be around. I always like to, you know, make the comment that he had a better view than anybody in the gallery that day. Perhaps him being on the other side of the universe might have helped sneak that last putt in the corner of the cup. At the time, I think it was the second youngest player to ever win the U.S. Amateur. I think he would have been extremely proud, and I think he would have said, "Don't let it go to your head, son." He wanted success for all of his children. But I think maintaining a level head was what was most important to him. I played 3 years on the European Tour when I finally did turn pro. I was, as they say, negative trending. I think I was 87th on the money list my freshman year, which was 2nd out of the rookie class. And then I was 115th the next year and 155th. It was early retirement for my golfing career at age 26. I like to say that I made my retirement announcement in front of my girlfriend and my Labrador. Golf is such a great technique to become close to your kids, which I've carried on to my generation and my children. When my son beat me for the first time, I was like the great Santini and Robert Duvall. I went to the practice range and practiced all the way an hour past dusk. But as time would always dictate, my son now beats me with regularity and just collected his first club championship, winning the Bears Club Championship, where Jack Nicklaus and others hang out. So we're very proud of Nathaniel Jr. at this point.
Nathaniel Crosby's new book is called 18 Holes with Bing, Golf, Life, and Lessons from Dad. Our story was produced by Karen Given.